Good evening. Welcome to Left, Right and Center. I'm Vishnu Shom on the program tonight. A packed 1 hour. A judge murdered in daylight in Dhanbad in Jharkhand. The Supreme Court takes notice. Our first topic, a judge murdered in broad daylight. Is even the law unsafe in India now? Next up, the massive COVID surge in Kerala. Do these numbers reflect a much higher testing, or is there a fear that if this situation gets out of hand, there could be a spread, and that at the very least India's second wave may not be quite over? Why is Kerala struggling with these COVID surging cases? Then we look at the massive new announcement of reservations, 27% quotas for OBCs and 10% for economically weaker sections in medical and dental courses in the country. Now, the matter was being heard in court. The government seemed to have problems implementing it, but this decision has been taken. Has it been time to coincide with the forthcoming Uttar Pradesh elections? And finally, the voices of fully vaccinated Indian students who face an expensive 2 lakh rupee quarantine in the UK when they travel there for their studies. This, even though they are fully vaccinated. And the tragedy here, the UK is allowing travellers from the European Union and the US to enter without quarantine. Many in the EU would be vaccinated with Vaxzevria. That's the same vaccine as what we call Covishield here in India. So why different rules for Indian nationals? Does that make sense at all? But our first big discussion, first this story. The death of a judge in Jharkhand in what was initially believed to be a hit-and-run case has taken a chilling turn, with security footage of the incident leading to a murder investigation.
After this chilling video, Dhanbad Judge Uttam Anand's death is now being investigated as murder, not a hit and run. On an empty road, this vehicle goes out of its path to knock him down.
तो देखकर के लग रहा है कि intentionally कोई मारा है, ये accident का केस नहीं लगता।
The police say it has seized the vehicle and arrested two people on charges of murder who have reportedly confessed. The number plate of the vehicle had been tampered with, hinting at signs of conspiracy.
जो कथन जांच के दायरे में आ रहे हैं उनको हम लोग उनसे पूछताछ कर रहे हैं। हमारी टीम अलग अलग जगह भी है, अब देख रहे हैं जो हमारे सही अधिकारी हमारे साथ हैं।
The actual owner of the vehicle claimed that it was stolen 2 days ago, while the family of the accused driver claimed he told them that he had won a lottery.
रात में करीब साढ़े तीन बजे हम उठे थे, देखे टेम्पू गायब है।
मेरा भाई बोला कि कहाँ था है? तो हम आए पाथलडी से, तो हमको 80,000 लॉटरी लगा। लॉटरी लगने के बाद हम यही गाड़ी लिए हैं और एक मोबाइल लिए।
Additional District Judge Uttam Yadav was involved in several high-profile cases. He had recently rejected the bails for two accused of Aman Singh's gang, a criminal notorious for kidnappings and extortion across Jharkhand and Bihar. The murder case of Ranjay Singh, a close aide of Jharia MLA Sanjeev Singh, was also pending before his court. The issue was also raised today before the Chief Justice of India by the Supreme Court Bar Association President Vikas Singh, who sought a CBI probe into the matter.
This was so shocking and such a brazen attempt on the independence of judiciary. I am demanding a CBI inquiry.
The Chief Justice of India said, "I have spoken to Chief Justice of Jharkhand High Court and he has taken up the issue and the case is going on there. We are aware of the case and we will take care." The Jharkhand High Court meanwhile warned the district police, with Chief Justice Ravi Ranjan saying, "There was a delay in filing an FIR in the case. We will monitor the probe and will not tolerate any laxity in it. If we find laxity on the part of the district police, then we will not hesitate in handing over the probe to the CBI." The judge was out jogging at around 5:35 in the morning. A passerby took him to hospital where he died around 9:30. The police identified him after his family reported him missing at 7 a.m. He was only half a kilometer away from his home when he was hit by the vehicle.
The broad daylight incident has sent shockwaves across the country, because if the guardians of the law itself are not safe, then it raises serious questions and demands a thorough probe. With Kundan from Dhanbad, Harivansh from Ranchi and Manish Kumar from Patna, in New Delhi, this is Sukirti Dwivedi for NDTV.
Well, joining us now, Mr. Vikas Singh, senior advocate in the Supreme Court and president of the Supreme Court Bar Association. He brought up this horrific attack in Jharkhand in the Supreme Court today. Vikram Singh, the former Director General of Police in Uttar Pradesh. Mr. Vikas Singh, let me come to you first. Is it too early to draw any conclusions on why this took place, or do you personally believe that it was the cases that this judge was looking at, that there was a mafia angle, and that there was an attempt to murder him?
Well, Vishnu, if you see, the death is not caused by the hitting by the vehicle. Because if a person is hit by a vehicle like this, normally you will have a couple of fractures and you will not die. What is remarkable and what is astonishing is, or shocking is, that when he was taken for post-mortem, he has got very severe injuries in the head by a blunt object. So probably when this car goes to hit him, actually it's not the car which is hitting him. Somebody sitting in this vehicle, whatever this vehicle was, auto rickshaw, whatever, that person hit the judge on his head and he dies because of that hit. So it's not the vehicle hitting him which causes his death. So it's the injury in the head. Now, this kind of a thing happening to a judge, and especially when you are also getting the fact that this was, the driver got it as a lottery and then, he's confessed to the crime. Obviously, there is some very big person behind it. And in such cases, and what is chilling is for the entire nation, that if a judge who is handling criminal cases is not safe, then I really dread nobody in this country is safe. So it's a very, very serious issue. I personally feel that this can't...
We'll get that line back with him in a moment from now. Mr. Vikram Singh, would you like to respond to this? And I think the point made by Vikas Singh is so important, that if judges are attacked and allegedly murdered, there is that sense of fear which can never be associated with being a judge. Therefore, this sets an awful precedent in this country, and it has to be fixed.
Absolutely, Mr. Vishnuji. That I have total agreement with Mr. Vikas Singh. This is a cold-blooded, deliberate murder. And if the senior judges like Uttam Anand ji are not safe, then I really don't know what kind of a horizon we are looking at. And look at the trajectory of the three-wheeler. It swerves on the left-hand side, just ramps into the deceased, and then gets away. And the number plate is tampered with, and it was stolen about 2 days ago. All things, boy, I can tell you from my own experience, Vishnuji, that it is a cold-blooded, deliberate murder, because the deceased was handling very sensitive cases of Ranjay Singh and Aman Singh, etc. All the more reason that needs to be investigated. And then I would have wanted the police, I would have been very happy if the police had announced a reward of 10 lakhs on important and relevant information in respect of those who are behind and subject the accused to narco analysis and polygraph test. There's a lot to be done, Mr. Chief.
Mr. Vikram Singh, security of judges in this country, it's often absent, in lower courts, smaller towns, smaller cities. Is this something that needs to be looked at as well?
Absolutely, Mr. Vishnu. You please see that in case of Uttar Pradesh also, there has to be a security environment and the ecosystem and in the lower courts that has to be ensured, and the ecosystem and the security of judges, especially those handling sensitive cases, they have to give it proper security. The threat perception of every judge has to be evaluated on a monthly basis. And if there is a consideration that the judge is under threat, then he is provided security commensurate to the threat that is to his life.
Mr. Vikas Singh is back with us. Sir, what happened in the Supreme Court today when you brought it up?
So, to give credit to the Honorable Judges, I talked to the Chief Justice of Jharkhand first in the morning. And he said that he has called the SSP and the district judge. Now, I thought that calling the SSP district judge will not be sufficient. So, I mentioned the matter before the Honorable Chief Justice of India. Now, these days, mentioning is not allowed normally, and which is a demand which as a Bar Association president, I've been really fighting for. So, I had to request the Registrar General, who then gave me a link. And because of the link, then I ultimately, I was actually before the Justice Chandrachud's item 1. And when the Chief Justice's court did not permit me to get inside, I went and mentioned before Justice Chandrachud, who was also equally shocked. And he said that I will bring it to the Honorable Chief Justice's notice during lunchtime for sure. But fortunately, I got a call while I was arguing for Justice Chandrachud by the Registrar General that the Chief Justice is waiting for me. So then they put me on, you know, when another hearing was going on, they put me on and the Chief Justice said that this is a very, you know, it's a very important issue and we are glad that you are raising it as the bar. And he said that, but the Chief Justice of Jharkhand, he has talked to him also and he has taken up the matter on the judicial side. So he said, we don't want to duplicate things here. So if you want, you can participate there. So then I immediately logged in there in Jharkhand and the Chief Justice was there. He had taken the SSP in the video conference hearing. And then he, you know, in that hearing, he said that I told him that, look here, if in a day the conspirators are not caught, you know, catching these small fries are of actually no consequence because these are, you know, these are people who take supari. They may have been paid 50,000 or 1 lakh rupees, etc. But this kind of a thing has to be planned by somebody who has to mastermind this. And that has to be somebody very big. So if we don't get to that person in a day or two, because these kind of cases, you know, the evidence goes, you know, very scarce very soon and becomes difficult to, you know, right. Get the trail. And there are so many CCTV footages, all that will have to be confiscated, etc. So the Chief Justice had told the SSP in my presence that we will monitor it on a daily basis. And I told him that if they don't do the CBI, if they don't get to the mastermind in a day or two, then I will insist for a CBI investigation because invariably, in such cases, it has to be with the collusion of the local police.
Right.
Nobody can plan this kind of a... This is a very big attack. It's actually an attack on democracy, if you ask me.
No, absolutely. It's absolutely shocking.
It's a negation of rule of law and it's an act of, you know, attack from the democracy. And it's a very serious issue.
If judges are attacked like this, if there is that...
They come to the mastermind, yeah. well and good. Otherwise, it's a huge intelligence failure according to me of the state also. Because this kind of a thing must have been planned. Somebody must have been there, etc. So this is a very, very, big issue according to me. And I will not let it go like this. Because as being heading the highest judiciary in the country, I mean the bar of the highest judiciary in this country, I feel I owe a certain responsibility to the profession and to the nation.
All right, sir. Thank you very much for being with us, Mr. Vikram Singh. Thank you very much for being with us as well. A very, very sad day. Our condolences to the family of that judge. We're going to move on now to our next topic. With Kerala reporting over 22,000 cases for a second day, the centre has decided to send a six-member team headed by the NCDC chief to aid the state's efforts. Uma Sudhir explores whether the Kerala model and its good practices are now ironically proving to be its undoing.
The answer to why Kerala is reporting more than 50% of the country's COVID cases is in the latest ICMR Sero survey that says only 44% of Kerala's population has antibodies to fight COVID infection, whereas it is 65% for the rest of the country.
The seroprevalence study conducted by the ICMR shows that the number of people or the percentage of people who have antibodies in their body is almost around 42%, which shows that our preventive mechanism was very good. Our system is always to test, trace and treat.
Even the 44% seropositivity in Kerala is not just due to infection but also vaccination. Kerala has already vaccinated over half of its adult population with at least one dose. The centre is concerned about Kerala as in the last 8 weeks, average daily new cases have jumped by 13%. Daily deaths have been between 97 and 174. Weekly positivity rate has been between 10.5% and 14.8%, but never below 10%.
The hospital admissions are also gradually increasing and we have around 3,200 hospital admissions in the last 24 hours. The major concern is that if the hospitals are getting filled, if the hospital gets, you know, is saturated, we cannot afford to have more beds, then it's going to be a huge problem for the health infrastructure in Kerala.
The much-lauded Kerala model has perhaps, in a sense, become its undoing, as virus exposure has been low. The challenge for Kerala is now to fast-track vaccinations even more so that they can slow the rate of infection and bring down hospital admissions, severity and mortality. With SP Babu in Thiruvananthapuram, and camera person Nagraju, Uma Sudhir, NDTV.
Well, joining us now, Dr. Sulfi Noo, is the state president elect of the Indian Medical Association, Dr. in Kerala. Dr. Rajiv Jayadevan joins us from Kochi. He's with the Sunrise Group of Hospitals. And Dr. Deepak Davidson joins us from Kottayam. He's with the Caritas Hospital and Research Institute. I'd like to thank you all very much for being with us. Dr. Noo, what explains the numbers in the last couple of weeks in Kerala?
Yeah, if you look at the last 2 days statistics, maybe 3 days statistics, we have the test done per day, it was around 2 lakhs, 1.8 lakhs, 1.6 lakhs. Usually we used to do around 1 lakh plus, 1.2 lakhs. Suddenly there was an increase. We have increased the number of testing. And that's why the total number of cases has gone beyond 20,000. That is just because of the total number of tests. But having said that, we cannot ignore that the test positivity is still high. It's around 13 point something. And it has never gone.
So it's great, Dr. Noo, that the tests are being done. But the tests are indicating that there are cases of people who are unwell. So given the fact that they are unwell, do we know why that's happening?
Yeah, actually, if you closely watch, what you can see is that only in the last couple of days, the hospital admissions were increased. Hmm. Since we were able to vaccinate a substantial number, serious illness, the people who needs ventilations, ICU beds, oxygen, that definitely has come down. Okay. But definitely, the test positivity has gone up, and now the hospital admissions are also increasing, at a very, very, very slow pace. But still, it is a point of concern.
Okay. Dr. Jayadevan, only 44% of Kerala's population has antibodies, as against 65% for the rest of the country, according to this ICMR, Indian Council for Medical Research, Sero survey. Why is that the case? And is that something which we should be concerned about?
Definitely. This is a major factor that determines the curve of a pandemic in a region. For instance, if we compare the progress of the pandemic to a forest fire, a forest fire can only burn through dried trees. So if there is fuel, the fire burns. So in Kerala, there's plenty of fuel. There are plenty of dried trees, which is a metaphor for people who are vulnerable. That is, people who don't have antibodies, either through natural infection or through vaccination. So if only 44% have been protected in one way or the other, you have a vulnerable 70 odd lakh people who are exposed to this fast spreading virus, which incidentally is spreading quickly indoors and much faster than the previous variant at higher viral loads. Faster in the sense the incubation period, that's the time for onset of symptoms, has dropped from 5 days to 2 days. And people who are vaccinated, who are fully vaccinated, are also picking up the virus in their nose and throats and spreading it around without knowing. They're not getting sick, but they're spreading it around. So people who are vaccinated and unvaccinated need to be extra careful while dealing with people on social visits or going to a store or going to work. Everybody has to wear a mask. Having said that, Kerala's mask-wearing compliance has been exemplary right from the start of the pandemic. So that is not a problem here. But there is a concern about the number of cases. But that being said, the testing system of Kerala has been well acknowledged. That
the numbers of tests are very, very high. It's extremely commendable. I mean, the idea is to find out, how unwell people are or how okay people are. But let me just go across to Dr. Davidson as well. Kerala is vaccinated, as I understand it, over half of its adult population with at least one dose. Now, that's not great compared to many other countries, but by Indian standards, that's actually quite good. And yet you've got these numbers of cases as well. So I'm just trying to understand what that means. Does it basically also indicate that a single dose is not effective enough in warding off infection?
Yeah, well, the present data, whatever it says that when you get a single dose of jab for your population, then you are not trying to totally remove the infection from your population. It's like the chances of hospital admissions are going to be significantly less. The chances of ICU admissions are going to be significantly less. And you could also reduce the death rates by approximately 95%, which means that when you have somebody, when you have a majority of the population being vaccinated, it gives you a lot of protection from acquiring a severe infection. That is, the case fatality rate is going to be significantly less. Not that the number of cases are going to be very significantly less. But of course, that too is going to help us out. But if you look at the present data, which says that above 45 years of adult population in Kerala, about 75% is vaccinated with a single jab compared to almost 50% of the national average. Mm. And when you look at people who have got two jabs, it's almost 20% compared to 7% of national average. Again, it means to say that, again, the number of vaccinated cases are significantly more compared to the other states. And again, the chances of getting severe infection, chances of affecting the healthcare system, a lot of patients getting admitted into ICUs are going to be significantly less.
Right. Just one more question to you, Dr. Jayadevan. A point that you were mentioning, you know, asymptomatic carriers. Is that something that worries you? You know, because you're trying to get an idea of why it's spreading. Are there hot spots? Are there huge gatherings? There was this recent case which came up in the Supreme Court as well on Bakari. Is that something which it's probably too early to see if that's had an impact? But, you know, I mean, with vaccinated people or single vaccinated people, are you as a medical practitioner seeing a rising possibility of asymptomatic people transmitting the infection?
In fact, if there is one thing that's worrying me, this is exactly what it is. That is, there is a substantial number of people who have received the vaccine and not being adept at immunology, they honestly believe that they're completely bulletproof to the virus, and so that this affects their behavior in the public. So they may drop their guard a little bit. And if you talk to somebody who is older and vulnerable, you may actually give them the virus. So that is a problem, and that is actually happening on the ground. And if you multiply that to n number of homes in the country or in the world, that is one way the pandemic is going to spread over the next few months all around the world, not just in Kerala. And America is already seeing it. So you heard Dr. Fauci say that, you know, masks are back and vaccinated people are spreading the infection. You just heard that today.
Dr. Duhu, you know, is there a worry for the rest of the country? If, for example, here in Delhi, the numbers are minimal. In parts of Maharashtra, other big cities, the numbers are minimal. At least that's what we believe, that they are minimal. Assuming that they are, is there a real worry that this could result in some sort of a spread and that this could in fact be an indicator that the second wave is not over, or this could in fact initiate the beginning of a third wave?
Yeah, we can always say that there's a probability that we can go into the third wave without touching the baseline. Having said that, I will say that, you know, you cannot just say that it's just a Kerala trigger, Maharashtra trigger, or Delhi trigger, or whatever. You know, it's just a pandemic, and we have to think globally. And you know, so that's why you see if the Kerala is becoming one center, we have to do the necessary thing to control that. You know, even I just cannot say that the Kerala is the reason. And if at all the Kerala is going to be a trigger point, then we have to act now. And definitely, I'll time and again say that the vaccination is definitely the most important thing, and we are short of, you know, even though the vaccination rate is a little high compared to many other states, we are having a lot of susceptible population at the moment, and so the vaccination definitely has to be. And moreover, the second point is we need to have a zero surveillance study district-wise in Kerala. Not only in Kerala, probably in Maharashtra also.
Sure.
Because you know, we have to find out if at all there are any other reasons. The sample studied by the ICMR is very, very small, and we have to do.
All right. Point taken, sir. There needs to be a larger study. I'd like to thank you, gentlemen, very much for being with us. The numbers in Kerala are a matter of huge concern, but the fact that the death rate is still relatively low indicates that the vaccines do appear to be working in preventing death, and that's what doctors say that they do at this stage. Severe infection and death, they are still very effective in dealing with those two scenarios. We're going to take a short break. There's a lot more coming up, including the voices of Indian students looking to get into the United Kingdom and Also, as you just saw over there, a huge reservation now, which has been announced in medical education in this country. The timing, is it with an eye on the UP polls? Medical and dental courses in the country will have a 27% reservation for other backward classes, 10% for economically weaker sections under the All India Quota Scheme for undergraduate and postgraduate schemes. This is for programs. This is what's been announced by the Prime Minister. It applies to so many courses, MBBS, BDS, MS, MD, also a diploma in medical programs, and it begins this academic year. This means that around 5,550 seats will be reserved for these communities, and the decision is also being seen in the context of next year's Uttar Pradesh elections, where caste and communal allegiances play a huge role.
Months ahead of key elections in several states, including the biggest one, Uttar Pradesh, the centre has announced a new set of quotas to be implemented. The Prime Minister described this as a landmark decision, saying this will immensely help thousands of our youth every year get better opportunities and create a new paradigm of social justice in our country.
The decision to go ahead with reservation was prompted by a court order, and the government was pushed to go ahead with this decision, irrespective of all political parties cutting across party lines, including the opposition, say it will be difficult for them to oppose this political move, especially since they don't want to be seen upsetting the SCs, STs, OBCs and the economically weaker sections.
In fact, they were compelled to take decision by the orders of the court. They never yielded. They didn't want to give a reservation to backward classes, particularly in state surrendered seats. In fact, they have been dodging. I would use this word. They have been dodging, they have been denying, depriving the backward class students.
It's a historical milestone. It's a great achievement. It is a great victory for social justice. Central government should implement strictly from this academic year onwards. For the past 4 years, OBCs have lost more than 11,200 seats in UG, PG, medical and dental seats.
The central government has provided for reservation in the All India Quota Scheme for medical and dental courses in state-run institutions. There will be a 27% reservation for OBCs and a 10% reservation for economically weaker sections. The government says about 5,500 students will benefit. The 27% OBC quota will take the total quotas up to 49.5%. For the EWS quota of 10%, extra seats were added after a 2019 amendment. The centre has said that the total seats for the unreserved category will not reduce. In Lucknow, the political nerve centre for the 2022 state polls and even the 2024 national election, MBBS aspirants were divided over the move.
गरीब वालों के लिए तो ठीक है, मगर जो OBC वालों के लिए लगा है वो तो फिर जनरल को इफेक्ट करेगा, क्योंकि अभी कॉलेजेस की सीट कम है इंडिया में मेडिकल को लेके, और जितनी डॉक्टरों की रिक्वायरमेंट है वो बहुत ज्यादा है एज पर द सीट।
और ये जो गवर्नमेंट द्वारा ये लॉ जारी किया गया है, ये हमारे लिए बेनिफिशियल होगा, क्योंकि इसके जरिए हमारे जो परसेंटेज होंगे मेरिट के वो ज्यादा इंक्रीज हो जाएंगे।
इन 2020 the Supreme Court had dismissed a batch of petitions, including by the Tamil Nadu government, seeking 50% OBC quota in state-run medical colleges. The AIADMK-led Tamil Nadu government and the DMK in power now had both moved the top court after the centre had said it was not possible to extend 50% OBC reservation last year. With Sunil Prabhu, Arvind Gunashekhar and Sam Daniel, this is Alok Pandey, NDTV.
Well, joining us now, Juhi Singh, spokesperson of the Samajwadi Party. Mm-hmm. We're also joined by Sujata Pandey. She's a political analyst, supports the BJP. Dr. Rohan Krishnan with us as well, National Vice President of the Federation of the All India Medical Association. Juhi Singh, let me come to you first. I know the Samajwadi Party questions the timing of this, and you've made a link to the forthcoming elections. But as a move itself for economically weaker sections, OBCs, do you not welcome it?
Vishnu, of course we welcome it. We've been protesting for the
central government to do this. And we have seen this paradigm of social justice with the prime minister is talking about being subverted in reservations, in various fees concessions given to OBCs and SCs and STs, and also in appointments and recruitment. So it's a welcome move. Let them implement it. Whether it is related to the state elections is irrelevant.
Ms. Singh, do you believe it's related? Do you believe it's related, the timing?
Vishnu, it's totally, everything BJP does is always related to some election or the other. So I would not really like to comment it because it's a step which we've been asking the government to take. And I think the students have been asking, other state governments have been also asking. So we completely support it, and they should implement it. Whether they've done it under the pressure of the court is also irrelevant.
Okay, Sujata Pandey, the point which is important to note is that the center was actually not really pushing to get this done. There was a case in the Madras High Court pushed by the DMK, which said that there needed to be orders passed. Orders were passed, and the center was obliged to carry it on. But they still said that, no, we don't want to implement this because there's another case which is being heard in the Supreme Court. So the point which is being made now is that, look, the center has suddenly gone ahead and said, no, we're going to do this now with an eye to the elections. Not because they necessarily wanted it.
Okay, Vishnu. So in a country like India, what you're hinting is that everything is done keeping an eye of the election.
Well,
so,
in our country,
every 3 to 4 months election is held. So I think we should move away from this myopic lens of seeing everything with related to the vote bank politics. I think we should see it in relation with the entire thing that PM Modi has said time and again is a Sabka Saath, Sabka Vikas and Sabka Vishwas. And OBC has been a part of this. This has been a long rooted movement, you know, right from the Baba Saab Ambedkar to the Mandal Commission 1, Mandal Commission 2, you know, and coming to the when the NEAT was organized to the 2007 when SCSTs were included, but OBCs were left behind.
But Sujata, could this not have been done earlier? Right? Why did the Supreme Court continue? Why did the government continue to insist that the case being heard in the Supreme Court needed to be looked at first?
Timing is always a question, right? Like if it doesn't do, then it's a OBC. You know, this government is anti OBC.
No. I'm not saying anti or pro. I am just observing, and I think it's a valid observation that it's time. It's time to the election. You can disagree with me. But I'm just trying to ask you,
if this is a great step,
and it obviously is, why could the center not have agreed to do this earlier? That's my only question.
Well, I would look at it a little differently. I would say that everything takes time, and there has to be a solid, there was a lot of, including Tamil Nadu, where the petitions were filed, and, you know, they went to the higher court for pushing this. There's a lot of movement, whether it is NEP movement or the Rishtu movement. So I think that, you know, rather than saying why they have done it, what is the timing, I think
we should just welcome it. That's your point.
And we should all just look at it as one step ahead in the social justice.
Okay. Dr. Krishnan, would you agree that the step that's been taken now works? One of the reasons why it works for students is that the government has ensured, or so they claim, that general category students will still be protected. So in the quota, which has now been allocated, for OBCs and those from economically weaker sections, that is not going to come in the way of those who are from the general quota, from one state looking to travel to another for an education. So that's fair, isn't it?
How is it fair? It cannot be fair. Government is saying that it will not affect the seats of the general candidate, but some way or the other, it is going to affect the seats of general candidate.
Because you believe will not be added. That's your point.
Even if it is added, that's what I'm going to comment, that even if it is added, then it could have gone to the general candidates as well, to the meritorious candidates as well. If something is added up and I'm getting nothing out of it, that makes me that it is not fair to me. How can we speak of fair when you will increase the quota? And I don't know about other aspects, but medically in post-graduation, someone who has completed MBBS, he's a full-fledged doctor. He earns 1 lakh rupees in Delhi. He can earn 2 to 3 lakhs rupees if he goes to a periphery setup. I don't think that postgraduate people need reservation. In super speciality courses, there are no reservation. Mm-hmm. Whenever some things are done, this is obviously done with a political mindset, and all the political parties keep their mouth mum in this because it is for the vote. But whenever these things are happening, there is merit is being killed, which is very bad.
Yeah.
So you cannot just claim that it is fair to general candidates. It's absolutely unfair.
Can I make some point here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, please go ahead, Sujata. And Juhi, I'll come to you after that.
So there is already a 40% reservation which is open for all. There is also what apart from this 27% of OBC, they have also come up with the economical weaker section 10%. You know, which also will take care of the upper caste and the meritorious student, but economically weak to go to have an education. This entire reservation of OBC was already existent in the politics.
No, but I think the point Sujata makes is that it should be on the basis of merit.
Just one second.
It shouldn't be on the basis of reservation.
Of course, you know, Vishnu, we would want to be existing in an idealistic society where things were happening on merit. But in a country like India, where we are a heterogeneous mix of things, where there's a history and geography of a larger section of society which is still deprived, which is still not getting what it should have got. So we are not living in an idealistic society, and the government must consider all this, you know.
Right.
If, you
and
know,
it nicely
you, you
sort
pick
of fits
up,
into...
You pick up data. Yes, you
to
pick
to
up
vote
data.
Bank politics.
Data. No, I am not talking about the vote bank. Every, you know, we know every party will do politics. India is a democratic country. If politics won't happen, what
and
else?
And so when Dr.
Happen?
Krishnan says that, please, there are students who, on the basis of merit, are unable to get admission, he's wrong.
No, he's definitely not. I wish we reached to a point where we can do everything basis on the merit, but
and
we have not.
And for postgraduate students. Juhi, would you like to take this? The point
so,
mentions
so
about
is,
postgraduate students who are trained,
so
who are already trained. If you have reduced, if you brought, you know, cut down on quotas, right, denied merit over there, the postgraduate level, how is that fair?
Vishnu, we unfortunately don't live in a land of equal opportunities. We have to look at this from the viewpoint of social justice for letting those people also who have been deprived of certain chances, who probably don't come up with the same opportunities or the same background as Mr. Krishnan, to also reach the postgraduate level. Just doing graduation in MBBS does not balance the scales equally in society. So yes, I can understand why he's questioning, increasing seats would probably, I hope the government does an increase
it
of
has
the adequate number of
Juhi.
Seats.
I don't know whether you are
ma'am,
aware,
please,
but 56
ma'am, I don't know the number, and you know the number. Ma'am, can I please just speak? Ma'am, please, can I just speak? I hope that the EWS reservation which has been given. Ma'am, I am also supplementing yours. The EWS, I hope, is not misused like in UP by various people who do have opportunities and giving false certificates and all. But I can understand that. But it is an unequal society, and we do need.
All right.
To move
so reservations you can't do about do without.
And seats
we are by no means
PG
in a situation
both,
where we can call for, you know, merit alone. Dr. Krishnan, I'm afraid you're going
to
have to accept the fact that quota number is now going up. It's at what, 49.5%?
That is what I'm saying, that even if when we are going to talk about equality and giving opportunities and speaking about the idealistic world or idealistic India where everything is based on the merit, then we have to take small step towards it. So my first point was that only.
And that has been taken.
No, but let him finish,
by introducing
a 10%. Sujata, let him finish.
Madam, you cannot have the cake and eat it as well. The thing is that it is completely based on the coming elections. I know it, Vishnu sir knows it, and you also knows it. So this is an entirely different topic on which I don't want to comment. But I just want to ask one question to all of you, that if someone who is a politician and who is earning crores of rupees in scams and otherwise also, their sons and their daughters gets this reservation, then what is the point of this reservation, and where is the social justice that you are talking about? If reservation is to be followed, then why it is not followed on EWS quota very, very strictly? Mm. I know thousands of people who are millennials and who are getting admissions through OBC quota. That you cannot just make a law and say that it is fine, because it is very fine for a small period of time, for a small outcome that could be benefit in any way to any party or anything. But larger, in a holistic approach, it is never going to work.
All right. Okay. So larger issues over there. And a certain political and other dynamic as well. I'd like to thank you all very much for being with us. I'm going to move on now. It's a packed program to something completely different. The United Kingdom will allow fully vaccinated visitors from the European Union and the United States to arrive without needing to quarantine from next week. From the 2nd of August, travelers with US and EU approved vaccines will not have to quarantine, but India continues to remain on the list. Fully vaccinated Indians, even with two doses of the India-made AstraZeneca drug Covishield, will need mandatory institutional quarantine for 2 weeks, despite India requesting the UK for relaxations. Now, the UK government has kept quarantine rules for travellers from France because of the presence of the Beta variant, but they'll review the status at the end of next week. Hopefully, they'll review the situation with India as well, because what we are looking at is this. If you're an EU national and have been vaccinated with a drug called Vaxzevria, you can go to the United Kingdom and be there without a quarantine. But if you've had Covishield over here in India, which is chemically identical, then you have to pay 2 lakh rupees as a student for a 10-day government-managed quarantine in a particular hotel where your food will be served and left outside your door, which you pick up and eat. It's virtually a jail term. Is that fair for our students? Well, we've got lots of reactions coming in. Dr. Rajay Narayan, the director of Global Health Alliance in the UK, joins us. Zubair Siddiqui is a third-year law student from Queen Mary University of London. We're also joined by Sarang Siddharth Sharma, a student of Queen Mary University in London. We'll be joined by our other panelists as well. Ranjit Singh Rathore is a former student union president for Brunel University in London. Let me come across to you first, Dr. Narayan. What sense does this rule make that with Covishield you have to go into quarantine, but with Vaxzevria you don't?
Thank you, Vishnu, for having me on the show. And you are absolutely right that people who are getting Covishield and Abhisku, you know, because in UK also we get Covishield, it's the same chemical as you said. But unfortunately, you know, India has been listed as a red country, and the reason why is because obviously we are getting lots of infection in India initially, and obviously we know that Delta variant also started kind of India where it all originated. So maybe the UK government is being slightly cautious, because again there was some blame game on the government, saying that in the UK that they should have closed the borders early with India when the second wave came to UK, and we were struggling with the second wave in the UK. So I think there is a reason why the UK government is doing this. It's not only because that people have got 2 jabs of Covishield can...
So they're sending some sort of a message, Dr. Narayan? Is that what you're suggesting?
Sorry, Vishnu?
Are you suggesting that the UK government is sending some sort of a message to India?
I'm not sure about that. I'm sure UK is also very happy to have you, Indian students. But most importantly, I think it is important that the UK and Indian government, they speak about it and clarify on this point, because that is very important.
They've been doing that, but nothing has changed so far.
Hopefully it should change.
Hopefully. There are a lot of students or many on this program counting on that. Ranjit, you want to come in over here with your thoughts on having to potentially pay up to 2 lakh rupees for a 10-day jail term? Oh, sorry. Did I say jail term? I meant hotel quarantine. Go ahead. Ranjit, your thoughts.
Indeed, you know, I very quietly and very rightly sympathize with all the students, which will have to, you know, dig deep into their pockets and pay such a significant, you know, quarantine fees. But I would also like to show you the flip side of it, you know, by your platform, probably, you know, spread the awareness about it, which I'll take the liberty to do so. So many of the top UK universities, what they're doing is they're offering students, Indian students who are coming to the UK, pay for the hotel quarantine fees. So it's a recent sort of, you know, breakthrough into the higher education sector, but not all the universities across the sector in the UK has adapted to it. So yeah. How this will sort of work is the logistics behind is, let's say, you know, you're paying 2,000 pounds.
Okay, your line is a bit bad. I'm just going to go across to Sanam Arora.
Which you paid to the hotel.
Sanam, let me ask you this. You're founder and chairperson of the National Indian Students and Alumni Union of the UK. Do you have any indicator that the British government is going to change the rules for Indian students?
Well, from my discussions with various stakeholders, it does not look likely, unfortunately, that this will change. What we're hearing is, you know, India, the situation, yes, it's improving, but there is a degree of concern about, you know, India's COVID situation and the various different variants that are coming out. So from this is not being said officially, Vishnu, but from what I'm hearing, it's unlikely that India will be taken off the red list at any point soon, which is a big concern to our Indian student community in the UK.
But isn't that strange that the United States, which is also seeing a large number of cases, you know, would be welcomed, whereas India, which is actually seeing a sharp decline now, is still being denied?
It's absolutely bizarre, and it's something that, you know, students are calling out as feeling discriminated against. Students are calling out as being, you know, something that they're not particularly happy about. And, you know, in fact, Vishnu, it's almost by design, because if I just explain this for a second, there is a deadline for current Indian students to be in the country by the 27th of September in order to be able to be eligible to apply for the post-study work visa. But even for students who, you know, might otherwise say, I'm actually not able to afford this, I wouldn't travel to the UK, they're kind of being told by design, either pay this 2 lakh fee or you forego the chance to apply for your post-study work visa. And by the way, 80% of Indian students choose to come to the UK from last year because there is now this graduate route visa, which actually our union campaigned for. So I think by design, there's an element of students feeling forced to apply for this visa. And I know the previous deadline was the 21st of June, which we spoke to the Home Office in the UK, got that extended to 27th of September. So a lot of students rushed before that, somehow making this pullback happen, rushed before, just before coming to the UK. They thankfully extended that, which we were happy about. But it still means that students have absolutely needed to be in the country by the 27th of September, and that is a big concern.
Sarang Sharma, would you like to come in with your thoughts about what's happening? How does this affect you?
Thank you for having me, sir. I would, as a student who's going to start his classes this fall, this is a really bizarre and strange situation because, like you said, the same vaccine applied to other students across the EU and the US don't have to quarantine. And also the amount, 2 lakh rupees, is a lot for a lot of international students. And it seems very strange that all of us who are even double jabbed have to go through this. So it's apart from the obvious financial burden it will have on us, it also will impact our mental health for sure, to be, you know, locked up for 10 days. I'm sure like the governments can work out some solution, maybe move the country to the amber list, or some sort of universities are helping, but not, they're subsidizing a part of our
and as
costs.
I understand it, the subsidy comes later. It's after you pay from it that you're reimbursed. That in the case of students going over there, it's only after you set up bank accounts and all that reimbursement comes back. So at the moment, it's cashed down.
Right. In my case, the university has offered to like sponsor half. They'll remove half the amount from the tuition fees I pay later. So they're doing it like that. But right now, you need funds to sort of book everything, the quarantine, everything just to enter the country. And then,
Mahima, are you worried? I mean, the costs are obviously a big factor. But are you okay about staying in a single room for 10 days, a room from which you cannot exit? Apparently, you can get out of there for 15, 20 minutes a day. It is very much like a jail. Are you okay with having to go through that experience?
Not at all. The isolation itself is going to be so traumatizing because you're obviously going from a certain community and then you're being literally put in isolation for 10 days. And for somebody like me, I don't have my university in London. So I'm going to go back to Heathrow, then book a ticket or spend that kind of money on a cab and then go to Sussex and then set up my living all over again. So definitely there's a lot of mental pressure associated with it.
I can imagine. Zubair Siddiqui, you want to come in over here? Do you feel that, you know, I mean, this is an injustice, quite beside the fact that you'll be double vaccinated, perhaps you already are. you would also be RT-PCR cleared, not just before you leave for the United Kingdom, but after you arrive in the United Kingdom as well. So you're as safe as anybody else, but you have to go in for a mini jail term while others with the same drug can waltz around. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's not. Thanks for having me. And I feel that it's not at all fair the way we've been treated. The international student community has been treated. I'm a third year law student. So during COVID, I had to rush back to my home and all of my education happened online. So I studied about 1 year or 1.5 years online and there was no compensation in my student fee. So already there was an economic burden on all of our students. We could not do part-time jobs because of COVID. We could not support ourselves. So, and now they've put this 2 lakh, 3 lakh rupee quarantine on us and 10 day and a 10 day term. And even then we'll be checked twice for a negative test during that quarantine period. So I don't think it's fair. It's not at all fair for the international students to be treated this way by the UK government.
Oh, it's a very, very difficult situation indeed. Sanam, 30 seconds running out. The government of India has actually appealed to the British government a couple of days back and said that, you know, look at our cases, they're coming down right now. You still believe that that's not going to have an impact immediately?
I'm hopeful that I'm wrong, but I don't think so. I think the UK is going to take a very, very cautious approach. I'm not sure I see the full science behind that, at least the science being communicated behind that, which I think is the job that the UK government needs to do better. I hope I'm wrong, but from what I've heard, we are not going to see relaxation of India moving from the red to amber list anytime soon. But, you know, even if that doesn't happen, Vishnu, our basic concern is the welfare of Indian students. And, you know, £1,750 and this jail term of 10 days, as you're saying, it is
extortion. And there are crazy solutions being looked upon by students. And that's such an expensive proposition to fly to a green list country, to go to an amber list country, spend a few days over there, then try and get out of quarantine. The costs are enormous. Or you go in for this hotel managed government quarantine, right?
That's absolutely the case. And, you know, students are struggling. They're really struggling at the minute. They're really deferring their decision making as well about whether to come or not. And
how does that help the United Kingdom? It doesn't help the United Kingdom. It doesn't help our students.
And
it's all unfortunate. It is very, very sad. Is this some bizarre form of vaccine racism? That's a question that really does need to be asked. I'm out of time on this program. We'll continue to raise this. So many students worried, including those students who've had Covaxin and have absolutely no idea if they can travel. We leave this program here. More coming up on NDTV 24/7.